KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Reports. I'm Stephen Cuevas in Los Angeles. And now, a big step forward for the Me Too movement in Sacramento. Governor Jerry Brown signed legislation last night to give whistleblower protections to legislative employees who report violations by staff or lawmakers. KQED's Tara Seiler has details.
Republican Assemblywoman Melissa Melendez from Lake Elsinore has tried four previous times to get this bill passed. Every time, it's been shelved by a Senate committee until now.
Five's a charm. That's right.
The bill seemed to gain popularity with revelations of widespread sexual harassment allegations at the Capitol. It finally passed the Senate last week and the Assembly yesterday. Melendez says if lawmakers are doing something they shouldn't, chances are staff are going to know about it, whether that's sexual harassment or corruption. But she says employees haven't been able to report it without fear of losing their jobs.
Women in this building have been waiting for decades to have some sort of protection, and I didn't think that they should have to wait one more day to have that protection put in place.
Under the bill, anyone who intentionally retaliates against a whistleblower could face a $10,000 fine and a year in jail. For the California Report, I'm Tara Seiler.
As L.A. city officials continue to hammer out rules for legalized street vending, a new state law aims to move ahead on the issue. KPCC's Leslie Beristain Rojas has more.
The bill introduced by California Senator Ricardo Lara aims to decriminalize street vending. As Lara explains, vendors would be subject only to administrative penalties,
which wouldn't be a misdemeanor and would allow for the street vendors to be able to address that penalty without having the fear of being incarcerated and, God forbid, deported.
Last year, the L.A. City Council voted to remove criminal penalties from street vending, though vendors are still cited and must pay fines. The city attorney's office says it hasn't received any misdemeanor street vending cases to prosecute since then. Lara's bill also proposes that local governments should not penalize street vendors unless they have a system in place for licensing them. L.A. officials have been debating such a system for years. It's been controversial. Some merchants say street vendors block sidewalks and compete with them for business. The city council is expected to take up street vending again later this month. For the California Report, I'm Leslie Beristain Rojas.
The independent state watchdog called the Little Hoover Commission says California needs a massive shift in how the state manages its forests and their risk of wildfire. And there's one key recommendation. The state should plan fires to prevent catastrophic new ones. KQED's Molly Peterson reports.
Prescribed burns have helped manage wildland risk for more than a century, but they're often politically unpopular. They're costly, and communities complain about the smoke. Air regulators count controlled burn smoke as pollution, whereas smoke from disastrous fires is just an act of God. Though it's rare, planned burns can spin out of control. The Little Hoover Commission is recommending the state embrace controlled fires, hire full-time crews, and boost public education. And the new report points out that smoke and soot from out-of-control fires probably pollutes worse than the fires we can control. For the California Report, I'm Molly Peterson.
October's Wine Country wildfires devastated both the built and the natural landscape, but KQED's Tiffany Kamhai says take a closer look. These burned areas are starting to show signs of new life.
On a recent sunny morning, about a dozen hikers met on a fire road in Sonoma County. This area, known to locals as the Valley of the Moon, burned in the October wildfires.
So here's a really great, dramatic example of...
That's Caitlin Cornwall. She's a biologist at the Sonoma Ecology Center. And she's pointing to a group of madrone trees. The lower half of the trees, which usually have a shiny reddish-brown bark, are charred. But the tree tops?
All of those leaves, the green leaves, are new since the fire. So that tree, it looked dead.
It's coming back.
And pretty soon it's going to be hard to tell that these trees burned.
And farther down along the trail, Cornwall points out an oak tree with leaves sprouting from its trunks.
You just don't see this normally.
Wow.
I've been talking about these species for 30 years, and I didn't know they could do this.
Cornwall's been leading these fire recovery walks since December. But now, with spring just around the corner, these charred lands are beginning to explode with color. And Cornwall's not surprised. She says fire has benefits for the land. Native Americans who lived here would even periodically start grass fires to stimulate plant growth.
Fire gets rid of dead vegetation. It cleans the ground surface of diseases. makes room for more plants to grow.
That practice ended when Europeans settled in California. But Cornwall says the plants are still well adapted to the fires we experience now. And she says these fires are not all that bad.
Yes, the fires cause loss and trauma. And yes, we have to do a lot as a society to be better prepared for them. But yes, we also live in a place where the beauty that we love here so much is not threatened by an event like this.
She says fire is actually what helps keep this natural landscape healthy. For the California Report, I'm Tiffany Kamhai in Sonoma County.
There's been a surge in complaints about nursing homes in California discharging residents who have no place else to go. Advocates say it tends to be lower-income residents, often with disabilities, and covered by Medi-Cal, who are the most impacted by this practice. Jocelyn Wiener reported on the problem for Kaiser Health News, and she talked about it with KQED health editor Carrie Feibel.
When you were looking at this problem, you found the case of a woman who was discharged from a nursing home in San Jose. What happened to her?
So her name was Anita Willis. She's 58, and she had landed in a nursing home after being hospitalized with a stroke and an aneurysm. After 30 days, her Medi-Cal managed care plan decided that she was not eligible to stay there anymore. And so the nursing home told her that she either had to pay $336 a day to stay on or leave by midnight. After her money ran out a few days later, she started sleeping on her friends' couches or her daughter's car. And she went back to the emergency room some 5 times in the first several weeks.
Wow. Does this type of thing happen a lot to Medi-Cal patients in California?
In California, complaints on this issue have jumped up about 70% in the past 5 years. I heard stories about people being wheeled out to the sidewalk in their wheelchairs or sent to homeless shelters or to live in their cars.
Is that legal? What are nursing homes supposed to be doing?
Well, it depends on who you ask. The advocates are concerned about it. They say that nursing homes need to make sure that people are safe. The nursing homes say, well, if someone came from a homeless background, then it might make sense for them to go back there.
Why is this happening right now?
Well, Medicare pays hundreds of dollars more per day than Medi-Cal. So if a person is admitted with Medicare coverage and then that runs out, they will be switched over to Medi-Cal. And then the nursing homes may be incentivized to give up that bed.
The nursing homes have a business reason to get the highest paying possible patient into each bed that they have.
Right.
And the lowest paying patients are those who are covered by Medi-Cal, which is the government income for low-income people and people with disabilities.
Right.
What do the nursing homes say about this?
Well, the nursing homes point out that the complaints are a very small percentage of the total number of people leaving nursing homes. And beyond that, they say that they can't be the safety net for the entire state. And sometimes a person really doesn't need a nursing home and would do better with some other kind of care.
Well, thank you so much, Jocelyn.
Thank you.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, has been conducting what are called I-9 audits around the state. Requests to inspect businesses' hiring records. There were audits at 7-Elevens in Southern California and across the nation in January, and last week at 77 businesses in Northern California. Angelo Paparelli is a partner practicing immigration law with the firm Seyfarth Shaw. I talked to him about what this might mean for business and how a new law in California that requires employers to ask ICE for warrants or subpoenas and to post notices about these inspections could affect the situation.
Historically, what ICE has done is to look at targets that they believe are historically employing unauthorized workers in particular industries, such as manufacturing, hospitality, food service, apparel, those types of industries, as well as what is known as strategic infrastructure. And that is likely to be a prime source of notices of inspection or targets for inspection.
Could an I-9 compliance check be a precursor to a larger raid if the employer does not follow up with the things they need to make sure they are in compliance?
Absolutely. There are intermediate steps, though. And the intermediate steps are that ICE could mainly assert its notice of intent to fine the employer, I should say, and that fine would become a final legal obligation to pay unless the employer requested a hearing before an administrative law judge.
Could this kind of stepped-up scrutiny of paperwork, essentially, still have an effect on the livelihoods of working undocumented people? Meaning, could it sort of send a chill? Could it scare people and prevent them from, you know, going back to their workplaces?
Immigration lawyers have historically referred to notices of inspections as run notices. In other words, when an undocumented worker sees the employer is checking I-9s again and understands it's as a result of a notice of inspection, those who are unauthorized are going to pursue alternate employment. They're not going to stay there and wait to be arrested, particularly under the current regime where anyone who is undocumented, even if they're not a serious felon or criminal, would be arrested and deportation removal proceedings would be initiated. So they don't stay around. So this will be disruptive, not only to the individuals, but also to the employer, because they will lose their workers. And since the California law, AB 450, requires a posting of the notice, the likelihood is that the employees will flee if they are undocumented sooner rather than later.
Angelo Paparelli is a partner practicing immigration law with the firm Seyfarth Shaw. Mr. Paparelli, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Be well.
We reached out to ICE for comments. In an email, agency spokesman James Schwab said worksite enforcement is nothing new and remains a priority of special agents to ensure employers are in compliance with the law. He says investigations are based on leads and tips and that the focus is on the criminal prosecution of employers who knowingly hire undocumented workers.
Support for the California Report comes from Paint Care. Through Paint Care, paint manufacturers make it easier for households and businesses to recycle leftover house paint, with over 800 convenient drop-off locations around California. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And Carnegie Mellon University's Master of Science in Software Management in Silicon Valley. Applications for the part-time program close on March 1st, cmu.edu/iii.
And that's the California Report for Tuesday, February 6th, a production of KQED Public Radio. From KQED's Los Angeles Bureau, I'm Stephen Cuevas.